I'm Faith Middleton. It's great to have you joining the party on the Food Schmooze here on WNPR in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. My food buddies are here. Chris Prosperi, our senior contributor, chef and owner of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut, senior producer Lori Mack, and producer Jonathan McNichol. And you can tell your friends no matter where they live. They can listen to the Food Schmooze from anywhere in the world, as many people do, at WNPR.org. And that is the site where all the things we talk about on the Food Schmooze are posted. All the recipes, the products, everything is there. The wines, the cocktails, our cookbook. And wait till we get to that. Okay, let me take this out. A good friend sent this to me as a gift. This is a jar, as you can see, a black lid, about 4 inches tall, this jar. And it says on the label, original skillet bacon spread.
Yum.
So we just opened this jar, and a low in Southbury, Connecticut, sent this to me, and we just tried it. And what did you think?
I thought it was just like bacon. It's just the only difference is it's a spread, but it's bacon.
So the idea is you put this on sandwiches of all kinds.
BLTs.
Yeah, no,
I don't know if I would do
come
that.
On,
you wouldn't
that's
do
like
that. I was just going to say.
That's anything, my mayonnaise replacement because, you know, I'm not a mayonnaise fan. That's my mayonnaise replacement.
I was thinking even on a tuna sandwich, this would be kind of
Oh, yeah.
A chicken sandwich, this would be pretty interesting.
That would be good.
This would be the new club sandwich spread.
Turkey.
So what's in here? Let's
right,
have
that's what I was thinking. Turkey, tuna.
So bacon.
And it's the first ingredient.
Of course.
It's the first ingredient.
And with smoke flavoring in it, by the way. The list after bacon is so long, and it has to do with the bacon, so don't ask me. Onion, balsamic vinegar of Modena, brown sugar, and salt, as if you needed salt. some soy lecithin, citrus flour, pectin, and black pepper. Okay. And they say put it on all kinds of stuff and
French
write to them
toast.
And tell them how you used it.
And
want
do
to
you
put
have
it on
to
my
refrigerate?
Pancakes.
And you must refrigerate once it is open. Okay. And you can find this at our website. We'll give you an email address for it if you would like to order this.
Gallons.
So go to WNPR.org and click on programs for the Faith Middleton Show. All right, so this kind of raises the issue of the wild things that restaurants are starting to do. And I mean beyond where they're taking sort of basic substances. Like these people took bacon and then made it into a spread. We're seeing a lot of fried pickles all over the place, right?
Yeah.
So I'm walking down the street in Sag Harbor. This is one of the best towns on the east end of Long Island. And we head into a place called LT Burger right on Main Street. And here's what caught our eye after ordering these burgers. Fried Oreos with Nutella milk chocolate sauce.
As if Oreos weren't enough.
Might as well slather them with Nutella.
That's right, and deep fry them. Did you try one?
I was going to say. That
no.
You didn't order one?
No, and I was eyeballing every which way to see if
there was
going
one out
to
there?
Somebody's table or if they were just being outrageous. You know, remember that $1,000 breakfast at some place in New York City? So,
and what did you find? Nothing?
No, I didn't see anything go by, but I just wanted to mention fried Oreos. So that reminded me of the study with the rats. Did you see that?
About where the Oreos?
Yeah.
That they're more
addictive than drugs.
Cocaine or
that the rats open them and they eat the cream first.
I thought that was a spoof. That was, okay. I mean, that was real.
I think it's real.
That's my least favorite part.
I like
the chocolate cookies the best.
No, I like the underside.
Yeah. You know, and the double stuffed, I think the proportions are off. And then, by the way, this is not the only fried food on today's schmooze. Our cookbook is called Southern Fried, including fried deviled eggs. Mm. So here is gluten-free pasta. Has anybody tried it?
I've tried a few, and some of them aren't bad.
Have they come a long way?
They've come a long way.
Cooks Illustrated decided to try 8 or 9 of them and put together a taste panel, which I very much appreciate. If you have gluten-free issues, I met someone this summer, and every time we all went out to dinner, we had to be very, very careful for this little girl. So they tried all kinds of ones, and it turns out that one of them, the brown rice pasta, is pretty close to the real deal, they said. And I'm quoting them. There was no gumminess or off flavors, and it is called Jovial. Jovial gluten-free brown rice pasta. It's around $4 a box. You can have it with tomato sauce or olive oil, however you make your pasta. So that's Jovial brand brown rice pasta. in Cook's Illustrated. It wins their taste test award. And so we want to say thanks to them for publicizing that. Chris, you have a kitchen tip from Cook's Illustrated. And this features, I think, a clever woman, Emily Mullins of Southbury, Connecticut. Her idea.
Very cool. I know. And it's local. That's why I like it even more. But it is a cool idea if you make bread. And this is about the second rise, like when you're rising a loaf bread in the loaf pan. And how do you keep it from getting dried out on top? And usually it's plastic wrap. And I've run into this where the plastic wrap sort of sticks to it. And then it gets all like pitted and stuff when you rip the plastic wrap off it. But she found a great way. And I use this product for some things too. And it's the plastic bags you get in the produce section of the grocery store, and she just slips it
on the wheel.
And what she does, instead of using the plastic wrap to put on top of the bread, she puts the whole loaf pan in the bag and just ties it closed.
So we'll be seeing people standing in the produce aisle.
Then rolling off a couple pieces and putting it in their pocket.
Out the door.
Okay. And just
don't
to note,
do that.
It is food safe, so it makes sense.
All right. Yeah, our magazine roundup brings us to fine cooking. And in the new issue, there is a recipe for a salsa. And what I love about this is that you can make this in a flash and put it on chicken, fish, or pork. This is a spicy grape salsa. If this takes 5-10 minutes, tops, to make this. So here's what you do. I just bought some, I just bought some organic red grapes the other day, seedless red grapes. And you just chop this up, and you toss them with some chopped sweet onion, a little minced jalapeno, a little lime zest, a squeeze of the lime juice from that lime, chopped fresh cilantro, and salt. And it is wonderful.
I bet that's really
that
good.
Easy.
It is that easy, and it is wonderful.
No tomatoes.
On everything. No tomatoes in this one.
That'd be good on salmon, too, wouldn't it?
Sure. Yeah, it would, actually. Right? So that is at our website, WNPR.org. Just click
great
on programs for the Faith Middleton Show. And nice job, fine cooking. Jonathan, if I make bacon, and occasionally I do, I put paper towels in.
Occasionally.
Every Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and
I think
Monday.
Every hour on the hour.
I think everybody knows now that this is a shtick, but in any case, what I do is when I make bacon is I put paper towels in a mug, in a coffee mug, and then when I'm done cooking the bacon, I pour the bacon fat into the paper towels in the mug. The towel absorbs the grease, and I just lift the paper towel into the trash basket.
Oh.
So I don't have to put the fat. I wouldn't put it down the sink, as some people crazily do.
Yeah.
Very bad for septic. Mm-hmm. And I don't put it in cans and wait for it to harden. I just do it this way, and
very
it lifts
simple.
Right out of the mug. So, Jonathan, you have a tip from someone who has a very clever way to handle this.
Also kind of related to paper towels, and this is if the grease is cooled and you can't pour it off anymore, you can just scoop the cooled grease out of the pan with the tube from the paper towels. The grease will go up into the tube and not run
genius.
Off that way.
Isn't that a
great idea? That's a good
idea.
That Cook's
idea.
Illustrated from Jeff Gegwich. So.
They call it down the tube, which it's really more up the tube, but, you know, okay.
And they probably ran out of paper towels.
Right.
They had been doing Faith's thing, and then they were out of paper towels.
Lori, I was in New York City, and a shop we were in the West Village featured this tip that you're about to give. We're going to give you the website so you can find out where it's sold near you. Naked Nuggets.
Which
I adore this.
Wait to try. Two chefs that are brothers were trying to come up with an idea for a healthy snack for their kids, and they discovered Naked Nuggets. It's basically a chicken nugget deconstructed. It's all-natural, juicy grilled chicken.
Whatever all-natural means.
Right, and seasonings and spices. So they have done away with the deep frying and the breading.
So if you want to know more about it, go to our website, WNPR.org, because we have listed a link to them so that you can find out where this might be sold near you. But it's starting to take New York City by storm. And what
idea.
A great idea for kids. But we were saying for us, too.
Yeah, and gluten-free and allergen-free.
Late-night snack.
That's right.
Yeah, so if you're rushing, crazy, you know, just running around like a maniac and feel like you don't even have time to cook anything, what a great thing to be able to grab these grilled chicken pieces.
Much healthier.
Naked Nuggets, they're called.
You just like the name.
I love it.
I do.
Some more of our food magazine roundup. We have Connecticut Magazine. Elise McClay, the restaurant reviewer, has given 3 stars to a place in New Canaan, Connecticut called Elm. And she said it's right on the green. It is a charming atmosphere. And Brian Lewis is the chef. He was in a partnership with the actor Richard Gere in Westchester County. They were doing some restaurants together, and I have tried those restaurants, and they were good. And she said, this guy is so talented. He does a 28-day aged ribeye, and it is one of the stars. Mm. I love ribeye. So it's right on Elm Street in New Canaan. According to Elise, his main courses are quite creative. Slow-baked Maine halibut spiced with Vandavan curry, one of India's mildest. And then he garnishes it with mission figs, lemon, and honey marmalade.
Oh, wow.
So this doesn't sound like, you know, everything but the kitchen sink.
It's
just kind of judicious use of wonderful things that you wouldn't necessarily think of going together. So I'd like to try this place. Elm, the small town charmer. Says Elise McClain, Connecticut Magazine. And if you are in New York City, where they can make some great donuts, I'm telling you, and more donut places open all the time. Corey Kova, who is a chef in New York City, got interested in a storefront in East Harlem because the price was right and said, wait a minute, why do I have to do a big thing? Why can't I just do coffee and donuts? Nothing else.
Simple.
Coffee and donuts. So this is what he did. According to the New York Times, he's making these puffy, yeast-raised, colorfully glazed donuts in very unusual flavors. For instance, pineapple brown butter, maple, miso, and blueberry rosemary. The place is called Dough Loco, and that's on Park Avenue at 97th Street, so in East Harlem. And you can go online to doughloco.com. We'll post that on our website, too, WNPR.org. We have Southern Fried. Our buddy Jim Villas is back on the show, and we're going to talk with him about this unbelievable recipe for fried deviled eggs. I'm Faith Middleton. I hope you make a charitable contribution to Feed the Hungry. More mouthwatering conversation and fun here on the Food Schmooze. We'll be right back.
Cornbread had a fight. Beans knocked cornbread out of sight. Beans. Cornbread said, now that's all right. Beans. Meet me on the corner tomorrow night.
I'll be ready.
I'm Faith Middleton. The Food Schmooze Party here on WNPR is heard Wednesdays at 3 and 9 p.m. and Saturdays at noon. Join the conversation with us on Facebook. Simply search The Faith Middleton Show. Thanks to our talented crew, senior contributor Chris Prosperi of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut, Eugene Amatruda, Marion Roy, senior producer Lori Mack, and producer Jonathan McNichol. We thank you first and foremost for listening. From the east end of Long Island, my Southern pal, James Villas, is back because he writes a new cookbook every week, as Southerners do. His newest is called Southern Fried, and let me just entertain you with a few dishes. We're going to talk about skillet steaks with chive butter, honey buttered fried chicken, skillet Parmesan chicken hash or turkey hash, pecan-crusted catfish, trout with bacon cream sauce, classy butter-fried oysters. Oh, boy. Take a statin and settle in with me because Jimmy Villas is back on the Food Schmooze. Southerners are not afraid of a little oil, it seems to me, Jim.
Well, of course not. We're raised on it.
Yeah, so you just be judicious about this. This first one I want to talk with you about is such a phenomenal idea. I hardly know what to say. It is one of the most delicious things I have ever tasted, and you know I'm talking about your recipe for fried deviled eggs.
That's probably the most unusual recipe in the entire book, Faith. And fried deviled eggs, I think that I first learned, do you know the name Louis Austin?
No.
Well, Louis Austin is one of the great chefs in the South, and he had a place at Pauley's Island. Louis is the first that I think that's the first time I ever tasted deviled eggs, and I couldn't believe it. It was my mother, you know, and we had those things to start a meal off with. And Mother said, this is the weirdest thing I've ever had in my life, you know. We had a congealed salad with it, you know. And she said, it's the most delicious thing I've ever put in it. They just melt in your mouth. I said, Louis, give me that recipe. And that's the recipe I've been using and playing with now for a number of years.
These are so good. It is crazy, crazy, crazy. So let's talk about this, because we're, of course, going to give this recipe on our website with a picture of your book. But
now, those really work, Faith.
Yeah, I know.
Those deviled eggs. That really does work.
I know. I've had them. So here's the thing. So you would do this in the traditional way. You boil eggs and cut them in half, right, lengthwise.
Right, lengthwise.
And then the yolks go in the bowl.
That's right.
And what do you add in? You add your...
Well, you can add anything you want to. You can mash them up with anything you want to. You can mash them up with chives or onions, you know. Or sometimes I'll put some pimentos in there, actually, if you really want to be southern.
Mayonnaise and mustard,
mayonnaise. You could
chives.
Try those if you wanted to. Now, you talk about something good as a little bit of curry powder.
I know. Okay, so then you fill the whites of the eggs with the yolk mixture,
right,
and set them aside, just like regular deviled eggs.
Just like regular deviled eggs.
And now comes the good part.
That's when you deep fry them very quickly.
You want to make sure, using one of those fat thermometers, that you're at 350 degrees. You can use about 2 inches of oil in your pan. But here's how the coating works. And this is not a crazy thick coating.
No. You'll ruin it if it's too thick.
Yeah. So you dredge these stuffed eggs in just a little bit of flour.
Right.
You dip them into the beaten egg and then very lightly in the breadcrumbs.
That's correct. But again, emphasize that very lightly.
And these are fine breadcrumbs. I use panko.
That's fine.
Okay.
That's good.
So then,
with a slotted spoon, lower those things into the hot fat. Now, Faith, this is one of the few times in which I'll let you use 350 degrees. Normally, I'll say 365, and I'll explain that in a minute when we talk about frying in general. But you don't want it quite that hot. 350 is fine for this, which means you'll get a little bit of fat absorption.
Okay, and you want to fry these till they're golden brown. You turn them once. It'll take you about 3-4 minutes.
3 to 4 minutes.
And on a paper towel for a little bit of draining, because heaven knows you wouldn't want to. And you serve them hot, and I'm telling you right now, you will be the talk of the town for a century. And if you go to our website, you will see James Villas' book, Southern Fried, and this recipe is going to be featured, plus another one.
In fact, do try to serve those as hot as possible.
Yes,
They get a little tepid, you know, a little bit of bland if you let them sit around.
Yeah, and you can spice these up.
Oh,
by
sure
the way,
you can.
You can, yeah. So let's, before we go on to the next recipe, which is skillet steaks with chive butter, talk with us about your temperature for cooking in oil and the kinds of oils you like to use.
Well, Faith, this is where, you know, frying gets a bad rap. And one reason I did the book and try to teach people, you know, that is simply all nonsense. It's because people just don't know how to fry. First of all, in the South, we are raised knowing which oils to use, how to deal with oils, but above all, how long we can use an oil. If you use bad oil, if you use old oil, you know, oil that's no good, that has been, you know, used to fry 4 and 5 times, you're sunk. You need, first of all, a good oil. Now, the key to oil is the smoking point. You need an oil that's got a high smoking point. Therefore, no matter what you want to believe or what you hear and everything, forget about olive oil. You don't fry an olive oil except on very rare occasions. You want a good oil. I prefer peanut oil in general, but you can certainly use corn oil, canola, soybeans, safflower. These are all very acceptable oils. But generally, a rule of thumb, you know, fried food gets a bad rap as being heavy, greasy, soggy, unhealthy. That's bull. As long as you keep any cooking oil around 365 degrees, not one bit below, Faith, you're going to absorb virtually no fat whatsoever.
And the reason, scientifically, Chris, please chime in on this. The reason is that the higher temperature, the food is not absorbing as much fat. Is that the science behind it?
It's not. It's sealed. It's not absorbing fat. Mm-hmm. It's not absorbing fat at 365 or more.
It's just cooking.
What you're doing, you're having a very quick cook on the outside, while on the inside, it is cooking very slowly, you know, and therefore that's the reason a great piece of fried chicken, a great piece of okra is moist on the inside and beautifully crisp on the outside. Again, if you just learn these very simple rules.
And, Jimmy, do you use a frying basket and an electric deep fryer at home?
I've got all those things, babe.
Well, yeah, I bet you do.
I mean, and the nice thing about frying today, people, you know, some people are scared of frying. And there's no need to be scared because there are so many wonderful Prestos, Cuisinarts, Calphalons, Waring on the market. They are fail-proof.
And they have lids on them now, too, which makes them easier.
Oh, it's unbelievable, those things. But in all honesty, you know what I really fry in the most? I still fry. I did it last night. I had to have some fried chicken, a little bit of fried chicken.
Yeah.
I still fry in black cast iron.
Yeah, that's what my mom used to fry. My mom still fries in black cast iron.
That is still my favorite, and I feel more secure. I was brought up as a child, my mother teaching me to fry in that, and I still like it. Now, my mother loved, and I'm coming about to it again. I pawpawed it for many, many years. My mother loved an electric fry pan.
Well, that's what I grew up with. And my sister, I covet my sister. She has one back from the 60s with the little turning dial
on the handle,
and
yeah.
that plug-in thing. And
I've got mothers. Oh. A few years ago, I've got mothers under the counter in that right now with that little dial you're talking about.
Isn't that a great thing?
1972.
It's just the best. On the counter it goes, and I eye it every time. I think I'm going to get my hands on that thing.
Well, the reason I haven't used it, you know, is because it does take up counter space.
Yeah, and you have so little.
But mother loved my – nobody can fry food like my mother. And with fried food, nothing can you control the heat better than that electric fry pan. I mean, you really can control the heat perfectly.
Yeah,
it has the thermostat on it.
You can see the thermostat.
The thermostat right there.
Maybe we could find one at a tag sale somebody knows. You know, write to us.
How do we store oil?
Okay.
How do you store what?
Oil.
The oil.
Where is the best place to store
after
oil?
After you use it, if you're going to use it a second time.
In the refrigerator.
And how long will it keep?
Hold on. First of all, generally speaking, the first rule is never fry different foods in the same oil. We learned in the South, for example, it's hideous to fry shrimp in oil that you've been used to fry chicken. So get that law down, first of all. Now, as far as the oil itself is concerned, never use it more than two, possibly three times. And if you use it three times, be sure and filter out the sediment that's in the thing. Pour it in a jar, put it in the refrigerator. It will keep a long, long, long time.
All right, so the only way that I would say my mother broke your rule was that she used lard with a basket to fry her potatoes. And
that's wonderful.
And only potatoes went in that lard. And
wonderful.
So she kept that for the longest time. It really did no straining of anything. And that lard began to be flavored with potatoes. And the best potatoes I've ever had.
And it didn't go in the fridge, right? It went under the counter.
It went under the stove. It did not go in.
And do you know, until the health notches got on it, you know McDonald's used to fry their potatoes in lard?
Yeah, I know.
Julia Child loved them.
Yeah, they were good.
Julia used to tell me that the best fried potatoes in the world are McDonald's. And she said then they ruined it because they wouldn't let them use lard anymore.
Yeah, so let's do skillet steak with chive butter. These flavored butters are so easy to make, aren't they?
They really are.
So tell us about making a chive butter.
Well, all you do to make a chive butter, you know, is you combine the butter with freshly chopped chives, form that into a little log. You put that into some cellophane or something like that and kind of twist it around, you know, until it makes a little log. Put it in the refrigerator, let it harden up a little bit, and just cut off little circles of that as you need it.
So it's soft, and you mix in whatever herbs or spices you want to put
anything
in your butter.
Anything you want to, Faith. And then when you do the steak, which is best to use a good beef tenderloin, once you finish cooking the steak, you know, all you do is put one of those little pellets of butter on the top with the chives in it, and it melts all over that steak, and you talk about luscious. It's beautiful.
Now, do you do that when you're serving?
When you're serving.
Yeah.
Well, 5 minutes before you're serving.
Yes.
Because when you put that on the table, you want that beautiful sauce gooing over the top of the steak.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yum.
Oh, yeah. So I do that sometimes with a little butter and gorgonzola.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Oh, gorgonzola. So I was so excited to see your recipe. I really was.
But that chive butter, that can be used on any kind of meats.
And baked potatoes.
And you can use it for a million things. Yeah. And hold on, that would also be wonderful on top of a nice piece of fried flounder.
Yeah, fried catfish.
Oh, fried catfish.
Oh, we're going to get to catfish. Now, if you hear that word and say, oh, catfish, I don't think so, please, I am insisting you try it once. It is so delicious.
Try what once?
Catfish.
Oh, my God. That's the problem.
Northerners don't eat catfish. I love it.
One of the great fish to eat.
That is the sweetest fish in the world. And they're now farming that stuff down in Mississippi, and there's more catfish on the market than you shake a stick at. It is the sweetest fish in the world.
And very inexpensive.
All right.
And cheap.
Now, because your book is called Southern Fried, you went back. There are a few recipes in here that are really something that have to do with things that we're not all so familiar with. I know that there are different ethnic populations that know about this, but here's one, fried crumbled pig's ears. So this is in markets readily in the South and in some ethnic markets around the Northeast too, but I've never tasted this. I hear it's really quite incredible. Can you just tell me about this before we go on to your Dijon chicken? Go ahead.
About pig's ears?
Yeah.
Okay, pig's ears are very readily available in tubs in the South. You'll also find them over on 8th Avenue in New York City and in various ethnic markets, you know. Pig's ears are tough as wet leather if you don't cook them correctly. We can't get into the cooking of all pig's ears. That is boiled, one of the most popular ways. But the way to assure the pig's ear to be wonderful is to fry the thing. What you do is you parboil that thing, parboil the hell out of it, as a matter of fact, the pig's ear. Drain it good, you know, and then deep fry that thing. And you talk about good. It is not tough. It is crisp, and it's got wonderful flavor.
So in a way, is it the same texture in the end as pork belly?
Somewhat.
Huh. With a pork rind on the outside.
I'd say it's more toothy than pork belly. You know, pork belly is really quite a lovely, soft thing. This is more toothy.
Okay. So let's go to first your Mississippi honey-battered fried chicken.
Oh, that's my sweet friend, Craig Claiborne's. That was Craig's recipe. He's the one that prepared it for me, and I never had the thing before, you know, out here in East Hampton. And what Craig did was he marinated his fried chicken. I think his mother did it. He got it from his mother in honey and vinegar, and then deep-fried it, you know. I personally, once I got the recipe and began playing with it, you know, I personally like to mix up a batter of the honey and the vinegar and dip my chicken in it as I go, whereas Craig liked to marinate his for a couple of hours in there. But it is a wonderful variation of fried chicken, and once you've had it, you really won't go back.
So you said, you know, this is one of the best fried chickens you've ever had.
And it's just a whole different dimension on fried chicken. Don't get me wrong. I love the kind of chicken I cooked last night, just good old classic Southern fried chicken. But if you want something elegant to put on the table, try the honey battered fried chicken.
Oh, that sounds so it's a little sweet tasting?
Yep. Well, it's like honey, you know. But again, that's balanced by the vinegar.
Yeah.
I mean, it's wonderful.
I want to try that one.
Yeah, it's kind of salty, sweet kind of.
Yeah,
salt. It's very beautifully balanced.
Salty, sweet, sour.
So when you're using your thermometer in the pan, do you just have a regular fat thermometer, it's called?
I do. It clicks on the side.
Okay.
Like a fountain pen, you know.
Yeah, okay. So this is good. So you don't need, if you've got one of those old-fashioned or modern electric fry pans, or you've got a little thermometer to see how hot your fat is, you're good to go.
And another trick, you know, if you don't have a thermometer, your dog steps on the thermometer, he chews it up or something like that. One good trick in frying food that we all learned as a child, you know, is, you know, get your fat going and so forth, and either drop, you know, scatter a few breadcrumbs on the fat, and the minute those things jump up to the top and start browning, your fat is ready.
If the oil starts to smoke because it got a little too hot, have you ruined the oil, or can you still use it?
That's when you're starting to ask for trouble. Just simply say, don't let your oil smoke. But yes, if it does, if my oil ever smokes, you know, which it hadn't for a long time, just push the vessel off the heat. It'll stop smoking immediately, and just be careful from there on.
Okay.
That's why those electric fry pans rock.
All right.
Exactly.
Here we go. Please support. We're going to have more Jim Vilas with us. He is author of Southern Fried, his new cookbook. As promised, everything we've been talking about, especially the fried deviled eggs, are going to be on the recipe. And we have a special turkey hash just to get you ready for leftovers. We just ate this. So delicious. Please support your local food growers and food makers. Find the food, wine recipes, and cocktails we feature anytime online at WNPR.org. Click on programs for the Faith Middleton Show, Food Schmooze. More delicious conversation after a quick break. Please stay with us.
It won't do to dream of caramel, to think of cinnamon and long for you. I am sitting in the morning at the diner on the corner. I am waiting at the counter for the man to pour the coffee, and he fills it only halfway. And before I even argue, he is looking out the window at somebody coming in. It is always nice to see you, says the man behind the counter to the woman who has come in. She is shaking her umbrella, and I look the other way as they're kissing their hellos, and I'm pretending not to see them. Instead, I pour the milk.
I'm Faith Middleton with the gang, and this is the Food Schmooze Party coming to you in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. You can tweet us at FaithWNPR, FaithWNPR. And to join the conversation with us on Facebook, search the Faith Middleton Show. All right, here we go. We've got James. We call him Jimmy Vilas, and he has done a new book, more than 150 recipes, Southern Fried, and he's been giving us a lesson in how to fry so that the food does not absorb the fat that you're cooking in. It has to do with temperature. You know, this is a very brave thing that I think Jimmy has done here, to say to people, listen, you know, in this age that we're in, where everybody's so concerned about fat, there's a way to do this, and Southerners know how to do it. And so and it's not hard. It's just using a little thermometer to see what's my temperature. And he tells you what the temperature should be for every single recipe. So, Jim, tell me about chicken Dijon. I love chicken and mustard, and this is one of my favorite dishes. So tell me about this.
Well, Faith, in the South, anything that's got the word Dijon attached to it, we think that is automatically a dish with mustard. And this is probably the... You know, people always want to know what to do with the chicken. I noticed this week the chicken breasts are on sale. Okay, what all do you do with the chicken breast besides boil it and make chicken salad out of it, you know? This is one of the typical southern ways, you know, of frying a chicken breast, and we fry it in bacon grease. And you talk about delicious. Remember, though, you serve it, you know, with a mustard cream sauce. Oh. Very elegant. In other words, you can serve this at a formal dinner like this. It is not highly fried. It's not over-fried. It is still very, very tender, very moist and everything. And then you've got that wonderful Dijon mustard cream sauce over the top of it with that wonderful flavor of bacon in there. Well, what more can I say?
Oh, yeah. So this is seasoning the chicken breast with a little salt and pepper, and in a heavy skillet. A little bit of butter can go in there, too. A little bit of oil or bacon grease if you want. And then you just fry these breasts till they're golden brown.
Don't forget the bacon grease.
These are skinless, by the way. Okay, here we go. This is the one we just tried. We ate before the show. And this is, I think, a great idea for leftovers for your turkey on Thanksgiving. This is, you can do this with chicken also. So skillet Parmesan, chicken hash or turkey hash.
Classic.
Yeah. So here comes the bacon grease again.
And I did you proud this morning by making these with bacon grease.
Well, that's a dish I was raised on, you know, with chicken hash. But look, like you say, you can certainly do it with turkey. Don't forget the bacon on that, though, because the bacon really, you know, bacon. I did a whole book on bacon because it is probably the great food of the world. And it just helps anything that you do. The nice thing about that chicken hash is you can play with that from here to eternity. Sometime I'll put some diced olives in there. Mm-hmm. Sometime I'll curry that, put a little bit of curry powder in that. You can put, if you want to, some bell pepper in that. Season it up with a little Tabasco. There's so much you can do with, again, leftover cooked diced chicken or turkey after Thanksgiving. Yep.
So you have, I save my bacon fat often, as Jim does. I put it in the freezer. And so in a skillet, you're going to heat just a little bit of that bacon grease, add some chopped up onion and bell pepper and garlic. Chris, that took you about 8 minutes, right?
You got it.
And then what did you do from there? You added the diced up chicken. You could even dice up a rotisserie chicken,
totally.
I suppose.
Whatever leftover you had.
Any chicken you got in the house is cooked, you know, you can use for this.
And you had leftover mashed potatoes, yeah. So you put those in, and you stir it up a little bit. Then you added some Parmesan cheese, some parsley, tarragon, salt, and pepper.
Love the tarragon.
And press that mixture down like it's a burger, mm-hmm. And it crisps up on the outside. Oh, it was delicious,
Jim.
Nothing
better. And if you want to make that a formal dish, you do what? You top it with a poached egg.
That's what we did this
and
morning.
And we did
right.
that.
Oh, my God. Well, then you know how good that is.
Oh, my God.
We're going to put this on the website because we wanted to give you an idea of what you could do with leftover turkey.
Friday morning.
Friday morning.
After
it would be really fun if you've got people sleeping over to do this.
It is
skillet,
so perfect for turkey.
Poach
so
an egg on top and
skillet
heaven.
Parmesan turkey hash. Or not. You know, it was great without it.
That dish is a perfect brunch dish, you know, for the day after Thanksgiving.
At one point, we all got onto this thing about hot sauces, and so then we started trying some of it with a little hot sauce.
Why not?
It was awesome with hot sauce.
Really fun. Yeah. So I am crazy about nut-crusted fish. I'm always dicing up nuts and using it for a batter. So you have a Catawba pecan-crusted catfish. Let's talk about catfish because it's one of my favorite fish to eat.
Well, Faith, I grew up catching catfish near Charlotte, North Carolina, at the Catawba River. The reason I call it Catawba pecan because it's a dish that I literally grew up on. I literally caught the fish myself. And I think you were talking about catfish a little while ago. The reason people, and I agree with them, are scared of catfish is they're the ugliest fish in the world. They are hideous. They're really scary. And believe me, as a child, I know I was catching those things. And that's the way we would do with a big cast iron skillet, our cabin out at the river, you know, we would, fry up those catfish for lots and lots and lots of people.
Catfish fries.
Catfish, exactly. Catfish fries. And produce, you know, those crunchy fish, you know, with a cornmeal pecan crust to them. Serve that with coleslaw, hush puppies, and sorry, Faith, don't forget the one thing you've got to have with that, ketchup.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, wow. So,
a little bit of ketchup. If you want to be really southern, just a little bit of ketchup and you've got it made.
We're talking about combining yellow cornmeal with chopped pecans and a little salt and pepper and then the catfish fillets. And so this is, you know, they're getting crusted on the outside and then into the little bit of oil they go on moderate heat in a cast iron skillet or whatever you've got. And there you go. It is the most delectably sweet fish. Jimmy, I have to tell you.
They're crunchy on the outside. But on the inside, they are still moist and beautiful.
I got to tell you what I did. I was giving a birthday party for a friend, and I had a deep fryer. And this friend is from Mississippi, and I thought, well, what could I do? And I thought, well, I went to online, and I found out that there was a really popular place in Mississippi. They have a lot of catfish farms there now. But this place was
considered
considered the best. So I ordered some catfish to be overnighted from this place in Mississippi. They sent along the hush puppies.
Ooh.
And the bread, you know, the coating, everything to go. It was like a kit.
Wow.
Catfish fry kit.
I brought the fryer out into the yard with an electrical cord and fried everything out there, put it on platters, and everybody just,
They loved it.
Oh, it was so, I loved it.
We
got to
bring
delicious.
The catfish fry to Connecticut.
Yeah.
Well, that's
we should
what
do
I,
big
I,
catfish neighborhood fries.
That's what I grew up as a child, Catawba River, those catfish fries.
Mm. Oh, boy.
It's a great tasting fish. And now it's all farm-raised, so you don't even have to see how ugly it is.
Right,
get it in a package.
You can feed dozens of people like that.
Yeah.
Dozens. And you talk about simple cooking. Nothing is more simple.
Mm. Hush puppies, too.
That catfish recipe right there.
Yeah, and very high protein. So that's another. Some people care. So trout, I don't have it often enough. And then I saw your recipe. This is a Blue Ridge trout with bacon cream sauce.
Well, people don't think too much about trout. And up in the Great Smokies of North Carolina and Tennessee and those rivers up there are some of the most beautiful blue trout you ever laid your eyes on. And again, this is a dish that we definitely fry in a little bit of bacon drippings.
Yay.
Yeah, exactly. And serve. Again, they're fried in no amount of time. It's so simple. And serve that with some sort of a cream sauce, you know, with chives or bell pepper or whatever, and a little bit of crumbled bacon over the top. It's a beautiful dish.
And can you use frozen trout if you can?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Today you can, yeah. I mean, they know how to freeze it, you know.
And up where I live, lots of people eat trout because there's a lot of trout streams and trout lakes.
Oh, it's such
so
a wonder.
So a lot of people up in the northwest corner of Connecticut eat trout.
Well, in so many corners of our region, you know, in Connecticut, New York.
It's a neglected fish. I don't see too much out here in East Hampton, and I regret that. Because it is a neglected fish, and trout is one of the most beautiful fish in the world.
Yeah, agreed.
So you're mixing together the flour, salt and pepper, cayenne, and you're dredging the trout fillets in this mixture.
Right.
And then you melt a little of your bacon drippings in the pan and start
Very little.
Yeah, and at the end you add a little tiny bit of half and half and your chives.
You
it bubbles up a little bit, and you crumble the bacon on top into that sauce, and then a little drizzle of sauce on the plate and the trout on top. Oh, wow. That's
How
can
that not be wonderful?
Well, that's true. Yeah. Well, this is James Villas. And Villas, and he is one of our regular visitors on the show, lives in East Hampton on the east end of Long Island. His new book is called Southern Fried. Some of the recipes we've been talking about and a link to the book and everything you need to know on our website at WNPR.org. Just click on programs for the Faith Middleton Show Food Schmooze. Okay. I went to a big oyster festival, Jim, and they were doing oysters kind of in this direction, but you have made me want to do them exactly your way. These are what you call classy butter-fried oysters.
Well,
little flour coating on them.
Oysters probably are they're one of the quintessential southern fried dishes. And you can either do them by themselves, or you can coat those things. I like them with a little bit of coating, you know, not too much. I do like mine breaded, you know. Cook those things, babe, no more than 2 minutes. And just very simple frying, shallow frying, by the way. There is a difference. Shallow fry those things, about 2 minutes, you know. Serve them, if you want to, with a cocktail sauce. I personally, and most Southerners prefer, just plain old lemon juice.
Mm-hmm. Nice. And I wouldn't use the heavier breadcrumbs because I use the finer panko crumbs for these because
those are wonderful.
Delicate and beautiful.
And I don't think I put it in the recipe, but I will say when I do those, I do put a few shots of Tabasco sauce in there.
Nice. A little heat.
Yeah, there are friends I know who will skip the crumbs altogether and just dredge in flour and then fry in butter.
That is fine. That's still classy. They're still wonderful. Yeah, just plain old butter.
You know, this is what I don't
bacon.
Understand about the clam bars that we have where they do the frying of the clams and the oysters with such a thick coating. Too much.
Yeah.
You know, it's just too much.
It's like bread on the outside.
We were talking a few minutes ago, the way you destroy things, that you were talking about the oil. It's also the breading. It's also the coating that you use on these things. If you use too much of that, you've destroyed the whole concept.
I think it's done because they feel like it looks like a large amount.
Well, that's one way. It's also cost effective for them also. They can make more money like that.
So you can make those at home so easily, right on the stovetop. You don't even have to have a deep fryer, just a little bit of butter or a little bit of oil or combination.
A good skillet. That's all you need.
Yeah, and there you go. And it is so delicate. You can really taste the oysters. Okay, now what else? I was thinking, what else could we do that would, because, you know, we're going to go back next week to Thanksgiving again. What could we do from your book that would be helpful for people for getting ready for Thanksgiving? And that's when I came upon your Tar Heel glazed sweet potatoes with pecans.
Well, I'll be a little prejudiced because, you know, we're the number one state in the production of sweet potatoes in the probably the world.
North Carolina.
Certainly the except for the fact that down in Louisiana they do have an awfully good sweet potato called a Beauregard, and it's an awfully good, beautiful sweet potato that one of the universities had worked on out there and produced, you know. But generally, the greatest sweet potatoes are from North Carolina.
That's so true.
These are potatoes I was raised here. Again, we got the pecans involved here. What you're talking about there, Faith, you're talking about those glazed potatoes are cubed, parboiled, and then fried in butter and brown sugar.
Oh.
And then when they're fried, they are dredged in some ground pecans.
Oh.
Now you can serve
pecans,
that. You
butter,
can
and it. Sweet potatoes.
Exactly. You can use that same thing with pork chops, with pulled pork or barbecue, with ribs. Or those potatoes are even great, especially at Thanksgiving, for dessert. Believe it or not.
Oh yeah.
Well, in a way, you've made sweet potato pie.
Same thing.
Yeah. Individual cubes.
My grandmother used to serve these things as a dessert at the end of the meal.
That's awesome.
And for those who like a little sweetness with the meal, you could serve this alongside your turkey.
Sure.
You could.
Oh,
but,
beautifully, yeah.
But anytime. You know, really, during the other 9-10 months of the year, you could serve this with anything.
Well, that'd be wonderful with turkey. I mean, what's the difference? You know, why just have a plain old baked sweet potato when you can have something like this? It's so simple to prepare.
Well, you know, people get pretty jazzed up about calories.
So, oh, please.
this is like throwing a piece of raw meat to a dog.
On that routine. As you know, I'm a cookbook writer. I've been writing for 40-something years. I'm still at 175, same thing I was 35 years ago. I eat everything and anything I want. It's the same old story, moderation.
Eat a lot of
I don't
it.
Understand why Americans have got to eat so much.
Because it tastes good.
Well,
yeah. Have a little self-control.
It's like someone once said, you know, if you ate caviar all the time, you wouldn't like it.
Yeah.
Last night, I mean, I was thinking about this last night when I took this chicken out of the pan. And I said, this would not satisfy my friends. They would have to have more. I don't understand. What is wrong with one piece of fried chicken knowing in the back of my mind that after that, I'm going to have some beautiful new pound cake I just baked.
Okay.
With ice cream on top.
There you go.
Exactly.
Yeah. There you go.
I just don't understand it in restaurants, seeing these mounds of food that people have got to gorge. And then go and complain about gaining weight. Give me a break.
I like your attitude.
Don't I love this guy? Oh,
why do people live today? I mean, if they got to deny themselves one of the few pleasures left in life, which is eating good food.
And fried chicken.
You know, with Julia Child, all I had to say was the word butter. And with you, Jim, it's the same thing. I just say calories. And he's off and running. Well, anyway, thanks for taking the bait. and I will talk with you soon. Nice job on this book, Jim. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Wonderful being as always, Faith.
And I'll see you soon.
Thank you, John.
The Food Schmooze on WNPR airs Wednesdays at 3 and 9 p.m., Saturdays at noon. We're online anytime. Find the recipes, food, products, restaurants, value wines, easy cocktails we feature, and cookbooks at WNPR.org. Click on programs for the Faith Middleton Show and Food Schmooze. Here's to pleasure, my friends, and remember, never eat more than you can lift. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton.
Everybody eats when they come to mind.